Waters, and I'm talking with Marcus Regis, Daniel Dacey, and they are explaining to me the difference between codes, 2D barcodes, RFID tags, and NFC.
A barcode, you have the 1D barcode, okay, which is a single standard barcode that you see in most shops with most product lines. Essentially what you've got with that is a symbologies-based recognition, which means it's symbols.
Yes.
Which and each of those symbols and spaces is a bit like Morse code, if you like, and it relates to numbers or letters or whatever you assign or have been assigned to that. So what you need with single barcode like that, and the other version of that, which is 2D barcodes, which is just a more complex version of the single barcode type operation, except that with 2D barcodes you can hold a lot more information inside a 2D barcode.
But the actual barcode's holding the information?
Well, it holds a code which can then be used to be brought back on a device that actually reads. It might be a numeric number, or it might be whatever is assigned to that particular barcode.
But the barcode isn't keeping the information. Surely the device is keeping the information.
Well, basically what it's doing is it's triggering information that is held on the device that's reading it.
So the information's somewhere and it's triggering it.
That's right.
So if you read a 2D barcode and you're out somewhere...
Or a 1D barcode.
Okay, mm-hmm. And you're out somewhere, it may be triggering information from the internet.
It could. It could design it so that it does that. On a standard reader, it might just bring up a price of the product and what the product is, you know, as we use it in supermarkets and things like that. In the case of an RFID tag, okay, radio frequency identification device, in that case, it is actually a smart tag because it's actually got a microchip embedded in it, a similar sort of microchip as what we would have in, say, you know, some of our simple computer devices, for example. And tags are called smart tags, and they're able to hold and store information, quite literally, things like documents and text material. Basically, they're able to hold far more information in an RFID tag.
But they're actually holding it in the tag.
They are,
this time.
In this case, because they've actually got memory. So they can hold anywhere from up to 20K through to about 1 megabyte, depending on the type of tag you have.
So when Daniel's talking about virtual trainer and triggering a RFID tag with virtual trainer.
That's right.
Is the information for that on the RFID tag or on the device?
Well, in this case, it uses it as a trigger mechanism to trigger other information that's stored on a database. However, you can use RFIDs to actually store and house text information, for example. It might be a document or a series of documents that can then be accessed on a mobile device, and that will then read from that RFID tag that text detail. So as long as it fits within the memory capacity of the RFID.
But then you've got two types of RFID tags.
Yes, there are. There are active tags and there are passive tags. Passive tags have no battery. Active tags actually have a little battery that's associated with them, so that makes them a little bit more powerful. It doesn't necessarily mean they can hold more information, but what it does mean is that you can read them from a greater distance away. So you can read, some of the active tags can read up to 10 metres away. So you can just get within a vicinity, the active vicinity, and they can be read. Basically, a bit like you move through the automated toll booths that they have these days.
Well,
they're an active tag based.
But isn't there an issue with the active tag based that they're a lot more expensive?
Yeah, they are. They're more expensive, and for the work that we're doing, and for the learner applications, active tags are not really a necessity. It's the passive tags are more than satisfactory to do what we want it to do. So, in other words, we've got two functions there. We can use and store text on a passive tag. And you can get tags that are rewritable. So in other words, you can change the information that's on those tags as well. So in other words, if you have a text document you want to put on one and you want to change it the week after, well, you can certainly do that too. So the rewritable ones allow you to do that sort of functionality, the transfer of simple text, if you like. But the other one is where you get the RFID tag actually triggers information.
Daniel's situation.
That's right. And that's where you get this really powerful applications.
That's when you're talking the embedded sort of
embedded, you've got, audio, visual, you can make it, say, print out off a printer, documentation.
But the device has got the stuff inside.
That's
it.
That's right.
And it's just telling it.
It's just triggering, it's finding that bit of information from a database on the reader.
But isn't there an issue with the RFID technology in that the standards are still moving, so different manufacturers
And there's a couple of issues, and Daniel no doubt will be able to fill you in a bit more on that too. But the key with a lot of this is the fact that RFIDs over the years, because they've been with us for a long while. In fact, you know, a lot of this concept started during the World War II. It came out of the radio frequency devices, the early ones that they used at that time. It has only been in the last decade, though, that there's really been active application of this type of technology to make it worthwhile. The key with it is, yes, there have been a number of different manufacturers. Some of the biggest well-known electronics names have been involved in the development of RFIDs, and they have all gone their own way. And the trouble is with designing and programming for these means that if you program, because they're proprietary, you have to program for one particular brand. And then if you get another brand in, you have to then start all over again.
So that means you have to have the right reader for the right card.
And you'd need, in that case, you'd need a so-called developer's kit to go with that if you're doing programming for those.
And that's where you come in too, to have to have the developer's kit and do that.
That is where programmers like Daniel would come in and work on that. However, if we're looking at what is happening now on the worldwide stage, very major players out of Europe and America have got together. Players such as Nokia and Sony, and there's quite a range of others that have got together now to develop what they have tagged. Pardon the pun, NFC technology.
Which is based on RFID technology anyway.
It is. It is based on that, and it's called NFC, or near-field communications. But it's more than just the reading and the tag. It's all of the other add-ons that fit around that, including things like databases that fit off those systems, tracking management systems. It's all part of, and people can actually chase that up, part of what they call the Nokia Field Force solutions. And that's a commercial that Nokia is looking at branching out and delivering to the world. But they're doing it in conjunction with a number of other larger players.
So you think that Nokia's technology is going to be the one that might go?
Not necessarily. But, I mean, the players are part of a consortium, and they're all helping each other in developing a standard for NFC. And that is, at the moment, where it stands, there is going to be an NFC standard. Will it eliminate other players? Well, no, it won't, and we'll still have proprietary materials that are out there in the marketplace, and they will serve their purpose, obviously. But NFC will become one of the largest rollouts because of the fact that you've got...
You don't agree?
You've got the ability to sell it and package it in
he's contradicting
in commercial
you here.
Products. That's fine. That's okay. He's allowed. But the reason I state that is because of the fact that Nokia is one of the world leaders in phone technology, and they have a huge amount of market share in the current phone technologies area. And that's why they want to get into this, because they can see so many other avenues to explore. The stats state at the moment, well, I say at the moment, in 2006, the stats have basically suggested that by 2010, 50% of all mobile phones in the world will be NFC capable and enabled. So that's
He's not agreeing with the stats.
I know what he's saying, but this is what is happening on the world market.
It's using RFID technology, NFC.
NFC, yep.
Any RFID?
Not necessarily, no. They'll work with specific types of RFID tagging. But it could be configured to work with others.
Why are you saying no, Daniel?
Only because of the licensing issues. I mean, the RFID standards are open. I mean, there is ISO standards that you can use, anyone can use, but Nokia really wants to sort of own a proprietary variation of that, and the problem with that is that there are some phone companies that Nokia won't do business with because they are competitors in the marketplace, and that, I think, is going to prevent this from becoming a global standard.
Well, if you have a look, Daniel, at the range of companies that are involved in the NFC cooperative,
yes.
It includes includes Motorola and a number of other major phone players as well. So I'm not sure.
The only concern I've got about is actual devices, because the Nokia devices aren't as programmable as, for example, the Windows ones, and that presents a problem as far as the content.
But if you go to a Windows mobile
yep.
platform, you're going to have an RFID reader.
Well, I mean, if we follow the if trends follow, if Nokia are able to prove the concept and able to prove that that there is a market for what Marcus has been explaining, then
which
other
is that?
Yeah, that's
cool.
Then other manufacturers, including HTC and others that actually develop for the alternative Microsoft Windows platform, will start developing
in an embedded.
And what we're going to end up with, and I think I'm fearful of, is a situation like we do where they're just not compatible, like the Apple versus a.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Windows machines, and that will take that. And I'm not saying that we won't get a standard. What I'm saying is it will probably take longer than 2010 because of that.
But you see, the reason they're doing it, and I think we've come back to the reasoning behind the NFC technologies is primarily for use in transactions, for example, paying for your groceries, paying for the ticket on the train on the way home, doing your bank transactions, booking tickets online, all of that sort of aspect can be done through the NFC, and that's why they want to incorporate it in one device, and that's primarily their push, because they see there's a need to get rid of the wallet, if you like, and the massive amount of cards that we have, and get into a single device that's pretty well does everything. Yeah, and that's where it's going. Now, it's already happening to some degree, because the rollout for 2D barcodes in Japan is pretty big, and they do exactly the same thing, or very much NFC.
And they take a photo.
They take a photo of the actual barcode. It then converts the information into detail, whatever is attached to that. There are limitations with it, and one of the main limitations is what I explained before, and that is the fact that RFIDs don't need what they call line of sight, so you can actually camouflage. They can be embedded in the object, so you can't actually see them. Whereas a barcode, you need to visually see, and if it's damaged or scratched or sprayed or got dust on it, it won't read it.
But back to the training point of view, just quickly, if we're going to use them in a training scenario, a normal lecturer is not going to be able to develop the material to go with the tags. You're going to need developers.
Oh, well, you will, but, I mean, there'll be far more products available. Daniel's products, for example. It's only been early days, but New England Computer Solutions has done a marvellous job in getting stuff together. And the key with the software that Daniel's developing is that it is easy to use, and it requires not a great deal of skill to be able to undertake, resource.
Once you've got Virtual Trainer, for example, set up,
or
podcaster, then a lecturer would be able to do it.
That's the whole point of it.